Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com. Well, good morning and welcome to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. This is Gene Brister with co-host of Let's Talk About It, Maria Wyatt. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning.
Maria, I'd like to ask you a few questions, if I could, this morning. First of all, how long have you been co-hosting Let's Talk About It on KUBO FM radio with Scott Dudley?
It's been around 4.5 years that I've been hosting the show.
Well, can you give me a little background on your occupation and how you were chosen to co-host the show?
I am the Behavioral Health Manager for an Adolescent Mental Health and Substance Abuse Treatment Program. And I was chosen partly because of my substance abuse background and partly because my boss chose me.
That's very important. Very important. So your background gives you a lot of insight into the weekly topics of the show.
Yes, it does. It does. When I first started working for behavioral health around approximately 13 years ago, I worked in the substance abuse field. And when I started on the show, it was a mental health and substance abuse show. And I learned a lot about the mental health side, about depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorders. So it was very good information and a lot of knowledge. I've gained a lot of knowledge through this show.
Let's Talk About It is promoted as community mental health in your living room. Would you say that's a fair description of the show? And if so, why?
Well, like I said, it is a good description of the show, but like I said before, we also provide substance abuse issues. So under the behavioral health program, under Imperial County Behavioral Health, we have a mental health and substance abuse consumers that are facing sometimes both issues co-occurring. So we want the community to know about the mental health and the substance abuse and also the co-occurring issues.
What source, in the singular sense, or sources, in the plural, do you use to draw from for your weekly guests?
We bring, actually, mostly right now is through behavioral health. We have a lot of staff that are very knowledgeable in the mental health and substance abuse field. We have clinicians. We have mental health rehab techs. We have program supervisors, managers that are very knowledgeable in both the mental health and in substance abuse, and in the co-occurring field. We also have guests from, sometimes from other states, from within California, from the community in itself. We brought in, like, for example, Dr. Ng, well-known psychiatrist. We brought in Jim Shin. He's a well-known licensed clinical social worker and also a counselor at a local school. But we try and get a lot of variety, for people, so they can communicate to the community on mental health and substance abuse.
Very well said. Now I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Over the time period that you have co-hosted this program, whom would you say was the most memorable guest and why?
The most memorable guest that we had on the show was a consumer at the perinatal program. The perinatal program is a program for women with substance abuse problems who are pregnant, postpartum, or have children. This consumer had gone through the perinatal program the first time when her children were removed from her custody. She did not complete the program successfully. The second time around, she went through the program again. It's because, again, the children were removed the second time. This time around, it was going like the first time. She was not motivated to change. She was not going through the treatment process. But during the course of the treatment, one of her children passed away in the custody of whoever was in the custody at that time. It was so traumatic. It wanted her to change, complete her program, and get the rest of her children back. And she did get it. She did complete it, and she did get her children back. And it was very emotional, that show. Everybody was crying in the radio show. It was very touching, especially for me now that I'm a mom. It was very emotional.
Maria, you've been a good sport this morning as you agreed to be a guest. We kind of turned the tables on you. You're usually the co-host of the show, but you were the one being interviewed this morning. Did it give you a different feeling?
Yes, it did. Usually I know what questions to ask. This time around, the tables were turned, and I didn't know what questions you were going to be asking. So I wasn't very prepared of my answers.
Well, you were very straightforward and very spontaneous, and that was wonderful. Well, starting on June the 15th, Let's Talk About It will not only be heard live on KUVO 88.7 FM radio, but you'll be able to log on to KXORadio.com and click Podcast on Demand to hear a five-minute highlight of the show or the show in its entirety. Maria, coming up after the break, you and co-host Scott Dudley have a special guest to interview. Would you give us their name and their topic?
Yes, he is Peter Rodriguez. He is the Mental Health Rehab Tech 3. He's going to be talking about Skill Helper and how Skill Helper was utilized towards a consumer who is diagnosed with a seriously mentally ill disorder, and how Skill Helper was able to help them integrate back into the community.
Well, we've been talking to Maria Wyatt, the weekly co-host of Let's Talk About It. Maria, we want to say thank you very much for your time this morning. Maria and Scott will be right back with more of Let's Talk About It after the break.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUVO 88.7, Fabio Bainwood.
And we're going to go ahead and jump right in, I suppose. His name is Peter Rodriguez. He's been a mental health rehabilitation technician. You're level 3 now, right?
Yes, I am, Scott.
So you passed the level 1 and level 2.
Yes, I did.
Did you get extra lives when you passed it? Or?
I believe so.
Well, tell us a little bit. What is a mental health rehab tech?
Well, what we do is we go ahead and follow clients who have been assigned to us. So they're doing mentally, check on their medications, their living home conditions, try to assist them with some placement options so they need placements, try to decrease their crisis into the crisis desk. We also try to work with their families, try to provide some job training opportunities for them if they're resistant to that. And one thing that we really try to help is how can they cope with their daily skills, grooming, getting along with the community, good social skills.
Now, being a mental health rehab tech, or formerly known as the case manager, is the purpose of goal being with these clients for all the rest of their lives, or?
Well, some of our given short-term case managers, they get their system on the app, secure placement, and we're able to terminate the services after they reach one to call with others, because they're chronically mentally ill and have numerous crises. In addition to the crisis, we have to follow them and closely monitor them. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what their current critical needs are.
So part of what you're doing is relieving immediate suffering, whether it's through kind of mechanical means like getting housing or something else, or counseling, like talking to them and stuff?
And sometimes it does help when you talk to them and counsel, because you can see the progress. And for example, grooming was really an issue with them, and that's their first immediate goal. Let's work on grooming is improved by at least try to shower once a week, and they try to increase it to twice a week. And eventually they'll catch on, and they're trying to model some behavior with them by going well then to their house. So they actually catch on after a while, and they have to buy into it. They have to show progress. And eventually when using what I want to present now, Skill Helper, that's part of stage one, is perfect. What's going on with them? And that's what I try to see in the first visit is, what's the real issue? Any of the housing, but any of the other issues why they have housing needs.
Mm-hmm. You know, what comes to mind is, especially when I come to the station, you know, when I go through the alley, and there's avenue right there in the park, there's a lot of homeless people. How come they don't have case managers or mental health rehab techs? How come they're getting these services that, you know, you're telling me that you assist them, you know, their daily living skills?
Mm-hmm. Well, some of them are.
Yeah, because we don't want to see homeless people.
Right.
We want them to be in a home and have their own place, and it's sad to see them sleeping in the park.
Right. And some of them, it's their own personal choice. We've done actual outreach. We do, it's like twice a year, go out there. And they actually have income. They have medical help, they have SSI, but they choose to be on the streets because they don't want to be in any kind of structured environment. Some of them like to pay rent. Some like to live paid by day. They love that kind of lifestyle. Now, it's not for everyone. Not everyone functions very well in that, especially in the summer. They really suffer more than they should. And some of them just so hard, they don't even want to follow even shelter rules. And others will not even qualify for such aid because they just run their bridges. So it's up to them. They have to make some real choices of what they really want in life. And some of them actually prefer, when you interview them, prefer to be out there in the streets. And others eventually realize, you know, they make some other choice. They want to get into such aid. They'll go ahead and buy into the system, go to the boarding care environment, and want more structure in their life.
Are you worried now that California's budget crisis is coming, that the system that people could buy into to alleviate homelessness or get that kind of support, that's going to erode?
I'm not really worried about the change of services. I think it's going to be challenging funding for us as a service provider, but I think it's going to be challenging for everyone across the board. We all have to make adjustments, and we have to be somewhat positive about the adjustments that we have to make. And I know when past couple weeks I've been telling clients I terminated the services because we're focusing on different needs. Really, I've accepted quite well. I didn't have any arguments with them or discussing. They realized we're all going through a crisis, and they actually bought into it, and you have to be an adjustment being made. Now, granted, you know, it's being only case manager now for adult services, for the county, that's going to be a challenging job for me. But I have to adjust, you know, my time and apply time management skills to my current position.
Well, and I think probably the bottom line, maybe this is a good bottom line for all social service agencies and education and everybody else, is that you've got limited resources. You have to make those resources work, and you have to make them work pretty quickly and pretty effectively. Otherwise, is it really going to be worth whatever social, you know, need that you're trying to fill? Now, you've got a model that you use to work with people to help determine what's going on and bring about quick resolution and bring about stuff that sticks, I suppose, too, with your mental health population. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the current model is Skill Health Model, and I just finished training last week. Anyway, I actually applied it to an actual client that was assigned to me in the month of April. Now, this was a very unique individual because he had a PhD to the President's office, and he had a place to live on that. So he was one step from being homeless.
Why?
He was not doing so well. He was diabetic. He had a drinking problem. He had issues. And his issues with him, and I'm going to call him Buddy because this is a tribute to Buddy, not his real name. He didn't feel like he had any hope in his life. This was the best of the life to be. And so I had him before, so I knew some of his past. It was kind of easy to build rapport with him initially. And by the way, I noticed what's going on with him? I went inside his apartment and saw that, well, his food was down to noodles. And that wasn't, to me, very nutritious. Especially, I knew he wasn't taking his medication, and he wasn't following through. Then he only had one, he had some clothing, but he wouldn't change. His cosmetic grooming was not a problem. And also knew that he didn't have any circle of friends, a support system. He had some family, but you didn't see them involved too much. Mm-hmm. I knew he was sad, lonely, depressed, because we would explore those. He goes, no, I want to come in over here. Oh, I'm not wanted there, or I'm not needed there, or they don't like me. So there were three things.
Well, that seems true.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it because, you know, his grooming drove people away from him. They just walk away from him.
So I guess the question is, why don't they? Thank you.
You know, but the more we started doing a rapport, and this was a guy who didn't have a lot as well, you know, after the next meeting, the next client, when he comes to the office at 8:30, so I was driving back and slow, man, he doesn't have a watch, he's not going to show up. So he showed up, he was there at 8 o'clock. So it showed me that whatever I told him on the previous visit, he bought into it. He was here on time. Yeah, actually 30 minutes earlier. So it showed me he was going to try to work with me and was open to it. He could have rejected me, but no, he accepted what was going to happen. And so eventually with my buddy, we were talking about a place in Ogden was better for him. And he goes, you know, Ringling Avenue is an apartment, and then you walking up and down that, that's not really good for you. And he goes, well, what do you have better for you? What do you, what can you do to improve me? So, well, I will facilitate, you know, in Hopedale, and talking about Blossom Inn, and so I said, old people, that's not for me, I'm not that old. And he goes, well, why don't you just go with it? And if it's not for you, then we'll look somewhere else. Well, he bought into it. And we went over there, and he checked it out, and he was welcome, and he got to see some of his peers. He wanted to see what some of the residents of the neighborhood right here in Bali. So he was reunited with some of his peers, and really was fully, it made him so happy.
So a sense of community that he did.
Yeah.
He connected quickly, and these people came up, and they hugged him, and were glad to see him, and he needed that human touch from others, from his peers.
Anyway, I mean, just getting a hug from somebody who's just, you see somebody you recognize, it's always a good feeling.
And if for me, that was, I think, the turning point for him. Because, you know, he says, well, you know, I can stay here, get it in here, then I have these friends and drink coffee. But that was where his friends, he would drink coffee, but now drinking coffee was just being a chore. It wasn't a fun thing. He was drinking by himself.
Mm-hmm. We're here today with Peter Irene. This is Let's Talk About It. This is the KBO. One of those 337-8874 materials. Call it if you want to talk to Peter or talk about how we do our things here with the adult population. Now, these people, I mean, give us kind of a framework, I guess, from a mental health sense about who you're working with, because this isn't just a regular person having a regular life.
Oh, no, they're, the kinds of work are chronic dementia, some of the, daily auditory and visual hallucinations. Others have strong suicidal thoughts. Others have passive suicidal thoughts. Others have criminal issues. They have court issues. Because of their behavior, they get arrested and get incarcerated. And some of them are on probation. And others have just burn a bridge with their family. Because they have poor social skills, they blow up their family. They have no communication anymore with their family. Some of them don't. And it really bothers me right now, when you want communication, they want me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you need to work at it. You need to build trust with them. You need to,
Do any of the other chronically ill have cope with use illegal substances?
Yeah.
Cope with their...
You know, some of them, and that's what we struggle with. A lot of them self-medicate instead of following the doctor's medication.
When they self-medicate, what kind of medication do they take?
Well, very impactful. Well, about too many of them drink, choice of drugs we find in Western Center Hospital, crystal meth or marijuana. And it's kind of sad because that's what they use to deal with their auditory or suicidal thoughts.
Okay, so that helps, huh? What's been your experience with people who try to use crystal meth or alcohol, I suppose, to manage?
They're very uncontrollable because I see them in the press after hours at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, screaming, yelling, kicking, and
how do you know? Is there, I mean, somebody coming in off the street at the after hours and they're screaming and kicking. How can you differentiate between a crystal meth user and somebody who has the mental illness?
Well, and, you know, and generally when they come in like that, we have to get them medically cleared and we get the lab results and then we get some kind of background. A lot of them we know because they're
returnees.
And we get them back and we know a lot about their background before even they come into the office because we get the phone call and we're already working on their case. So we actually know a lot about their background. You know, we just want to know is it this was started or did something else lead to it? Was it the drug you started or did a family argument really start the problem? And a lot of the customers just didn't happen at 2 o'clock in the morning. It happened maybe 7:30 in the morning. You know, it just prolonged to the next day.
Trying to imagine how desperate a person would have to be to try to be in a position to use something like crystal methamphetamine to manage hallucinations, knowing that it's going to lead to this crisis thing because it's led to this crisis thing before, but not feeling like they have any other options. It must be an awkward moment for us.
Yeah, but you know, eventually they have their cooling off period when they're actually become remorseful and, you know, and just have to lie again, and that's where you just give up and try to coach them, try to problem manage with them, try to, you know, look, just explore some better options with you. What can we do? Do you need a referral to drug and alcohol? Do you need one-on-one psychotherapy? What can we do to assist you to improve your current lifestyle? Mm-hmm. This is what we're here for.
So why do they medicate like that? I mean, what, from your experience working with people and using kind of a skilled helper thing to figure out what's really going on,
well,
why does somebody get to that point?
Well, so maybe sometimes when it comes to it, well, what I see when it comes to that point is that they don't tell us everything. We ask probably questions and they don't say everything. When we get into the practice, they ask us like, you know, okay, this is what we got. We need to explore some more. Let's real issues, you know.
Well, first of all, they're, you know, they're getting asked questions on mental health issues, and which is has a lot of stigma, and then if they're using drugs, which is more.
Right.
I mean,
they're really not supposed to use drugs, and it's illegal, and so if you ask them, what am I supposed to do?
I'm going to tell you that it's a very
uncomfortable.
Me as a person, I'll tell you, if somebody starts asking me questions, I'm not going
to disappoint. And maybe I don't want you to be disappointed in me either.
Exactly.
So
how do you get that?
Mine usually the second time when I visit them, is really where I really get to explore with them. Then this interview is where we get into basic basic information, address, phone number, demographics.
Mm-hmm.
Right. By the second day, well, we have to make a decision where they're going to be going to, being discharged or being sent to a psychiatric hospital, is where we're really able to explore and get information from them, because they have calmed down. They've been sometimes sent to the hospital, given some medication to assist them. You calm down their auditory hallucinations, or sometimes if they're intoxicated, they have to get detoxed before they come back.
Intoxicated.
You know, so it's a long process. By then they're drained, and they just, you know, they know they need to move on and try to help.
Is that a point where people are ready to make changes sometimes?
Sometimes they have a capacity to make some real changes, and we've seen them. When I don't see them again, then you make a difference,
mm-hmm.
a good difference. But we start repeating things that repeaters and something's going on, or, you know.
Right, practice makes perfect. And you have to get how many times you feel like, oh, right, 200 or something.
And, yeah. and it kind of bothers me when I see them again, you know, first of all, what did I miss? You know.
There's something else here.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, I know I already have this information, and we explore some other questions with them and see what we can get out of this. So back to my buddy with skill helper. After coming back from Boston, man, he was great. But he was really, his whole vision changed. I mean, from his grooming.
What was his diagnosis?
He was currently schizophrenic.
Wow.
And he's been like this for years. But what really changed with him right away quickly was he wanted to go and get his medical, get his physical done. And we went to the next level, the Pueblo, which is very challenging because you have to wait hours to be seen by doctors there. And he was patient. He goes, I can do it. I said, well, don't worry about it. And then he goes, oh, that's a good way. Let's not worry about time. So he was able to buy in with me that we're not going to be rushing this. This is a long process. And he got his physical done. And it took us several tests that we have to go through. But he never once complained about it. He knew he was going to a better place. And so this guy did it. He was given new clothing. He was welcomed by his staff. He was welcomed by his peers. But when I did a follow-up visit, he finally agreed that his hair was cut. He was trimmed. He was groomed. He shaved. He had new clothing. Had a better outlook in life. And he was just the most happiest person I've ever seen at that point. And I was like, wow, 3 weeks. I've actually... this transformation is happening right in front of us. You know, it's actually working. And people got to see him and staff, right in front of got to see him, but they didn't even recognize him.
Yeah. Does that mean, we know that, we need to work in the field, I suppose. You know that paranoid schizophrenia is a, we assume it's going to be lifelong. We assume it doesn't just go away with a trim, haircut, and new clothes. Does that kind of question whether or not that person really had that disorder from deep to begin with, or maybe it was being fueled by drugs and chaos and stress and something?
Loneliness.
But exactly. And Maria, I think you hit it right. He was very lonely. Extremely lonely, too. And that's what I think he really got into. The change in his hygiene did help. But having friends, people to talk to, and he said, we would have this and talk about his, well, I met with someone, so we had a great time talking about music. And we're going here, and we're going, oh, we had a plan. He had a purpose now for life. It wasn't just get up in the morning and I wanted to walk Adams all day long. I'm going to do something. I'm going to go and see if I'm living in a good environment. I'm getting fed 3 times a day. I got snacks. My diabetes, someone's taking care of it. And it wasn't just all on him. It wasn't, the burden was on him anymore. He had some responsibility, yes. And he followed the house rules.
To make sure he does his doctor appointment.
Right, and he followed the house rules. And mm-hmm. I would get reports from staff, you know what, I wish we had more people like him. Because he was a model citizen.
In some respects, he might have even benefited from and enjoyed the structure.
Oh, yes, he definitely enjoyed the structure because he had been before in several structure environments, but he didn't have an enjoyable experience because he wasn't, he struggled with, at times, some of the roles, and yeah, he found that they had roles, but there were things that he could live with and he could follow through and he was going to buy into it. And it wasn't rigid. He had some flexibility. We showed him how to use public transportation right in front of him, and he was able to learn to use the bus transit in terms of El Central, in terms of appointments, in terms of his friends here, and go back to his places. So he was, with skill helper, I was showing him how to be independent, and that's what much depended on me. And he was learning that, and he bought into it, and he especially, you know, where like in stage two of what do I need or want, well, he definitely wanted places, mm-hmm. and he wanted friendships, and he wanted, you know, but he also wanted some type of independence. Well, you're not going to drive him. How can I get to a central? Well, here's the bus transit, and here's the schedule. And he bought into it, and he got the schedule. He would check in and check out and report back. And he didn't have a problem because he goes, wow, this is great. I got flexibility. And that's what he needed. He just wanted some flexibility in his schedule.
Without being trapped by his fight.
Without being trapped,
you with no friends.
Without being trapped with no bureaucracy, no friends. And he had the freedom to come back, and he could check in and check out. He could participate in groups. And that was one thing he was doing out there. He really got involved in the groups, and really bought into the whole system. And then when he needed time alone and wanted to see friends in El Central, get on the transit, visit his friends for 2 or 3 hours, get back on, and be in time back to dinner.
Did his drinking stop also?
You know, that was always brought up to me. I never had an issue with his drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was my presence or he started responding to me, but I never had an issue. I know that people in a charter service can have issues with him drinking. But with me, I never had an issue with that. And, you know.
Do you mean that he did drink, but it didn't bother you? Or you weren't aware that he was drinking? Or
with me, I never saw it.
Okay.
He never showed me that he was drinking. He never showed the signs that he was having alcohol problems.
So when you would go on for like a surprise home visit,
he wasn't back on the couch. No. He was always willing. He was ready to go every time. In fact, he looked forward to when I would show up. And I remember we were getting ready to leave. And we were going to Blossom Inn, and he had some pornographic pictures, so he can't take those. He goes, I don't want. It's empty. It's an empty building for Adelon. And I thought I was in a struggle. I thought I said, I want to take these with me. And he didn't. He didn't want to. And that just showed me that, you know, he knew what was acceptable and what's not acceptable.
And was maybe ready for some of that structure in his life.
Yes, and definitely ready and open for that structure.
How long was he at living on Adams Evans after coming to
school? For years. I mean, I would see him and it was kind of sad to see because he did have a payee.
What do you mean by a payee?
He had a payee to the public administrator's office. And then, even despite having a payee and even despite them providing their own case management services, you could tell this guy was 1 foot from being homeless. I mean, it was just a struggle. And it was difficult for public administrator's case management, and they didn't know what to do. And everyone knew he needed a better place, but who was going to get him there? Who can reach out to him? Different staff tried, they wanted to see what he was responding, he wasn't receptive, he was around resistant. people that I had, like, every time I'll ask them questions, I'll ask them, good, great. I said, well, you've got to explore more your feelings. And one thing I really... One day we talked through, I really was having a moment about friendships. And he goes, well, friends are great. No, explore that. Why are they great? Then he started with coffee and music. We talk about, I mean, jokes. And that's one thing I'm going to miss out on is calling a little with us is because he had a great sense of humor. You know, he really knew about life. He makes you laugh sometimes. He says on silly jokes. I know he would call me sir, 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 and I would say, and he's like, you don't have to call me sir. You know, and with the lady who was like, Miss. And those are the things that we're going to miss. Even staff is going to miss with him because he was a very enjoyable time to work with. I mean, he had his challenges and there were moments that it was frustrating for people. But, I mean, with me, I think it was a very enjoyable experience. So honored to help him. But I know the last 6 weeks of life, my new sister made a big difference in his life. He changed for all the good.
We're top now. We're going to take a short station break. We'll come back with Peter and talk a little bit more about how he uses his skill helper techniques to work with his mental health person at this point. All right,
you're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio, and we are brought to you by Imperial County's Behavioral Health, KUBO 88.7. And our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
Welcome back, and our guest today is Peter Rodriguez. He's a mental health rehabilitation technician working for County Mental Health.
Three.
He's not working at three. He starts working at three. No. He's a level three.
Yeah. Yeah, and during the break, you were telling us about Buddy and how great his improvements is. How he changed his life. What did his family? I mean, you had mentioned earlier that he had no relationship or his family would also stay away.
His family, I don't know really with them. I generally work with him. I know he has some family members, but I generally work with him. But I could tell that he felt good about himself. He walked with his head up. He probably walked with his head down. And he had a very positive outlook to his life, the way the direction was going. You know, and he was, I think what made him more proud was he could be independent and get on the bus and go places. And people feel when they're at a skilled nursing facility, they talk to me, and it's like, that's it, out the pasture. He thought it was more to life than just being in that facility. And he participate and go out and shop and come back and do the program and eat his meals and get all his medical needs to be taken care of. And what we do is just follow a few simple rules.
Mm. How many people are out there in this community that if they were able to do that and be able to get that kind of supportive housing and disability care, wouldn't be better served?
Well, that's one thing that they would have to probably look at and probably get some probably state licensing requirements too, so they have to probably get some special permission.
Oh, we're talking about 100 people, we're talking about 10 people, you know, how many people in this community? You know,
Who are seriously mentally ill?
Seriously mentally ill, like, my buddy.
And struggling.
And struggling. Well, more than 100. More than 100. It's quite a few.
Going back, I have the same, going back to his family, could the family have done what you did?
You know, the family at one point did something for him. That was one point when he unfortunately was deported because he was a citizen. Mm-hmm. And the family was able to get him back across. And they had to go through a lot of bureaucracy to get him.
Was he reported?
Well, he didn't have any documentation to prove he was a citizen. They had to really dig him and fight through a lot of bureaucracy to bring him back. This was way before 9/11, so imagine the help to bring him back. So family, at one point, did step up to the plate, did get him back here in the United States, and went through a lot. And I think that just stressed the family's limits. What more can they do for him?
Could it be a lack of information, education on the illness, the medical illness?
And this is different. I mean, a lot of families struggle with that. I mean, even though there's pamphlets and books and there's information out there, they really struggle with knowing that this has happened to a family member. They don't know how to deal with it. And we can't talk about it. They really internalize it. They won't say much about it.
Especially, for Hispanic culture, you know, we just tend to keep our problems to ourselves and
right. We
want the neighbors to know. Or other family members know.
I mean, we all have unless people have family issues, we all have to learn how to deal with it. And also, ways in a lot of us, we just don't talk about it. We're not really open about it, and we turn it into it explodes, unfortunately, sometimes for some family members because they can't handle the stress.
Well, and there's like basic minimum family operating requirements, like bathing, for example.
Yeah.
And if people in my family go weeks without bathing, at some point I'm gonna have to say, geez, I love you, but I can't have you here like that.
Right.
And that's just bathing. I mean,
that's nice. Drugs or uproarious
behavior or something else. It's so families having the resources to deal with fairly common situations for people with fairly severe conditions.
But wouldn't you find out why? First of all, before even telling them, I love you, but I got why.
There's something wrong with you, or there's some sort of disorder, or you have a condition, or I don't know if I need to know the name of the condition, but clearly if somebody's not bathing for weeks on end, there's something seriously wrong with them, and I'm sure family's trying to help.
Right.
Go take a bath. Right. Maybe that's helping. But at some point, the resources of the family aren't going, and the structure of the family isn't going to be able to hold that type of out of the norm behavior.
Right, and that's where Skill Helper comes into play because you allow the clients to become independent. You gotta teach them, you gotta model for them, you gotta give them opportunities to not only succeed, but also give them opportunities for them to fail. And don't call it failure to them. Challenge them, call them, but they give them the opportunities to succeed, plus the opportunity that they fail, then just go back to step one. What did not work and the reasons why.
So let's play that out, I guess. I guess we could use bathing as an example.
Right.
And I'm telling you that I've got friends that people don't like me over here and maybe use the helper to realize that it's because I'm not taking a bath or shower. How do you get me to figure that out and start to work on it?
Well, one thing I did with Buddy was he noticed right away when we took him to appointments that people would back away.
Okay.
And he goes, they're backing away because they don't like my smell. And he goes, yes. How come you don't back away? Well, I have to work with you. And it doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. So you accept me. He goes, yes, I'm an accepting person. And so he got to know people that accept him. And so he started to make little changes. He would try to comb his hair. Get a beard. He would try to comb it. So we went to his next appointment date. They're not walking away that fast. As well, you comb your hair, you try to comb your beard, make some change.
And so he wanted people to, not move away from him or not reject him or something.
Right. He dealt with rejection and in his own way. He sometimes would discuss it with me, and other times he would just put his head down and walk away because he knew there was no point in discussing or arguing with that person anymore. He already been rejected.
So why, he didn't bathe because he didn't care anymore or just that there was no point to it or just before? What was it? Is it on a wide basis or was not necessary for him?
Right, and he had motivation. He knew that they were why should I bathe? No one likes me. And that was just, his scheme of things. He said, no one's talking to me. I can't go here because they don't want me there. And so, that's when I took him the first time to Boston, and it was it really opened his eyes. Well, you shower and bathe. You had hugs while showering. You imagine what more your life could be, and you did shower. And I think when we really explored that, it really opened up him, how he started thinking the real possibilities here for him.
So he likes it when people like and accept him.
Yes, and then when her staff and the peers accepted him the way he was, that was outstanding. I mean, when he, the first impression, he was given all those hugs and welcomed by staff, mm-hmm. and welcomed by his peers. He's been there before. He's been down this road before. Succeeded and might have failed. You know, and this, is this going to make it or not? And those were true concerns of him. And he was embraced by staff, and he goes, I want to try. And I'm going to try these results. And he did his part.
And plus, you need results.
And the results were outstanding, immediate. He went from zero grooming, from zero showering to showering every day. From not shaving to shaving every day. From my company's hair to company's hair to mix matching his clothes. You know, he just started to mix match his clothing and have different outfits. And look at me, like, I'm wearing this shirt and I'm wearing your pants. And he looked forward to changing his clothing every day. That was the purpose in life for him. And he had, what he was missing was hope. And hope was there for him. He got to see it and hope didn't die with him. And like, you know what I did with Skill Hub? I gave him, there was a reason to be hopeful for the next day. It wasn't just, tomorrow day. There was some kind of meaning and purpose in life for him.
So let's talk about it. We're here to hear Peter Arter. He's our rehab tech for County of the Girl. 387-874 is the phone number. If you want to give us a call this morning, talk to Peter. Peter, do you think the hope comes from inside or outside, or both sides?
For me, hope comes from internal and outside. You've got to have some kind of vision for yourself. What do you want in your life? And then how do you respond to what you get out of this to people? What kind of response is it going to be for them? And the feedback you get, I mean, people will give you good feedback, people give you some negative feedback, and how do you respond to those feedbacks?
It's like if you give negative feedback, people are going to see negative. Way, you know, being a negative comment. But you know what? I hear that. I mean, where we work, we sometimes clients, you know, that people just have, they feel depressed or say negative comments, or we always try and encourage them, you know, because that's what we want them to. We want them to move on with their lives, improve their lives, get over their addiction, stabilize their mental health. So we're always, and you do, and sometimes my father goes, how can you stand it when people are all, everything going around where you work, it's just a lot of negativity. It's just stuff. If you say something negative, I say something positive back, It's a challenge,
It's a challenge, and I know the challenge, because I'll be on call this week, starting tonight at 5 p.m., and then next Thursday at 8 in the morning. So it's going to be a challenging week for me at work.
When you look at every crisis as an opportunity to regain hope and meaning and purpose in your life?
I see working in crisis hours two purposes. That's what you mentioned right now. And two, it's also a sign of professional growth. It's, yes, you get paid for much money, don't get it wrong. But I think it also develops your professional skills. What can you do? I mean, I look forward every time to, what can I do better? That's my goal. How can I each of you better? Do I use motivational technique? Do I use skill help? Or do I use how I'm going to respond? And each one's different. They're not the same. They're no cookie cutters yet. Pretty morning. Each person that comes in there is different.
Can we copy that as a quote or something that would say?
And I really, there's one aspect of life I really enjoy. And as a person, that's one aspect of life I really enjoy. I know a lot of people, how can you actually love it? Well, you only got two choices. You either love it or you don't love it. Because if you don't love it, then you shouldn't do it. And that's just my opinion.
So if you get a call tonight at 2 o'clock in the morning, you go and then you have to go back to work.
That's right, I have to go back to work, and sometimes
at
my regular time at 8 o'clock, and sometimes it's been a struggle. There have been some opportunities where you've been up all night, and you just can't answer the call at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's a challenge, and it's a struggle. I mean, how are you going to respond? And you have to call in and say, you know what, I can't, because I didn't get sleep. You know, I didn't sleep until I need to take my nap for at least 4 or 5 hours because I need to make it to the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't respond to my 8 o'clock. You know, it happens every once in a while, not too often, but you try to, and that's one thing, you really got to time manage your opportunities when you're at home. You got some downtime, you got to really rest. You know, do relax and think things that make you happy. You know, and sometimes I know at home with this struggle of, there's some things you got to do around the house. When I'm on call, it's all downtime.
All you have to do is start a week.
Is that for another week? Because you need your downtime to relax, get your mind focused, and get as much rest as you can. Because when you have sleep, well, if I sleep, I need time away from work. Watch a movie or something. Rent DVD. Get something. Get your mind away from work for a moment.
I do. 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. When I'm up, I don't think about work, especially the weekends. It's all family. But, I'm really happy there. I'm really glad that there's still helper and we're providing cognitive behavioral therapy. And, you know, our director, Mr. Horn, has brought in a lot of training that trained our staff at Behavioral Health to provide appropriate interventions to these mentally ill and substance abuse clients. So that's one of the, we're happy. And I think we have a call. Okay. And, what else have you used? I mentioned a little bit about CBT and what is it? Can you give us just a little bit about the kind of behavioral therapy and other interventions that you have used?
CBT is just some techniques we use to try and help them problem manage their current situation. If they have any anxiety problems, perhaps some deep breathing techniques, or maybe they can report some feedback by taking short walks, or some people can journal write. A lot of us have automatic thoughts about issues. Well, what's your first automatic thought? A lot of us are saying something negative. Well, what do you make that automatic thought something positive?
But you have other skills, you have other interventions you can provide.
It's not just a skill helper. It's a combination of techniques that you can use to different individuals that you feel would benefit.
And just like you said, there wasn't everybody, but not the same person.
No one's a cookie cutter. Everyone's different.
For some people, skill helper might work, and for others,
CBT would work, and for others, motivation, training, skills would help. And, for example, yesterday I was in Raleigh and being assigned to case manager for adult services of the county. I was interviewing the person, and it was a challenge because, first of all, right, was requested by the call, but no, I can't. And then we went back and forth negotiating when she would come into the office or when should I go to the office. And this took about an hour over the phone, back and forth. And I had to be really patient. She finally agreed, okay, I'll come into the office. But I'm going to come in when I want to. So sure, I'm here all day.
Mm-hmm.
And when she arrived, she was, at first she was nervous. And we did the introduction, and we started talking. And she goes, oh, I'm so sorry I gave you a hard time. So it's not, you don't have to be sorry about this. What it's all about, it's the first time. Yes, you're going to be nervous. Yes, you're going to be hesitant. They don't want to talk about topics, but you open up. If you gave yourself a chance, you know, and you need some help, you need to come in.
So on that one, would you do this, or is it just yourself?
Well, with that, it was a combination of motivation, it was a combination of skill helper, and it was a combination of all these. CBT was one issue, it was a combination of motivation, what she could do to motivate herself, and then also the skill helper level, this explorer was a real issue there. And we got to explore for a while, and she was open to it, and thing I really enjoyed is she was agreeing to come for an next visit. She understood the boundaries I have to set. And she understands the next time there'll be a visit. You know, there'll be a visit the next time, and there'll be like a residence. And she was open to coming to the office. So there's a lot of flexibility. She knows how to reach it. And that's what a lot of people, they're like afraid about policy and procedures and bureaucracy. You know, how many times I get to come to my house, and how many times I have to see you. And once you set your boundaries on what they are, what they're going to be, they're, oh, how's all that?
So you just mentioned right now that you're the only mental health rehab tech for the adult.
Because, yes, I'm the only one for the adult population. I'm covering teens 1, 2, and 3.
How many, what is your caseload right now?
My caseload would be, eventually, it's going to probably get turned down to 25 to 30 clients from the North Fam to the South Fam, covering east and west of the county. So it's going to be a challenge because we're having some organization moves that have to be made.
Well, it's very economy right now. And we are getting our donors is joining in.
Yeah.
So, but we are trying to match the best we
can.
And doing more with less. And definitely, in your case, you're doing a lot more with.
Right.
We're doing a lot more with that one case plan or one and a half reactor.
Right. So I have to be, do this current track, be really flexible. And I look forward to the challenge. I have to be positive about this. I say this as an opportunity to maybe create new things, or maybe to assist people in different ways than we have done. And it's going to be maybe a different model than what we've been doing before. But it's going to be one that I think clients and us as service providers going to have to be open and flexible.
Mm-hmm. But just to let our public know, there's still the dual diagnosis program.
Yes, there's still the diagnosis program is still available.
There's still the Mental Health Services Act program.
Mental Health Services Act is still available. Crisis Services is still available. System Center is still available. And we still have children's program. And shout out to Laura and Claudia, you've been listening. You're part of my group. Still help her.
We also have the Resource Center.
Yes, we do have the Resource Center.
And it expanded, correctly. They increased their services.
And they're going to have vocational rehab training there that's going to be available for the clients as they get themselves.
And I know, which with me, because I work a lot with them, let's just see, age has gone from 16, down to 16. So a lot of adolescents, age 16 and older, can access the vocational resources at the Resource Center. So I'm happy
right
about that.
And so I think that's a great opportunity for our clients and for our department as well to expand different areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially I think that right now, the way the economy is right now, there's a lot of programs that are being cut. And we're fortunate to have these funds for the Mental Health Services side that can continue providing and actually expand into other services, like you said, the recovery staff, the recovery staff, some vocational, educational also, some housing. There's going to be a lot of things, a lot of exciting things. Yeah, it's a change.
It's a change. The change is here. We're going to go forward with the change.
Who moved the cheese?
That's right.
Where our cheese is being moved.
That's right, but it's going to be good for everyone.
We have to adjust and be flexible.
Right.
Oh my gosh. So what do you want to say to the community or to people who might be listening, especially for, you said that there's maybe a hundred people that could benefit that are seriously mentally ill to the family members or to the loved ones or if they know somebody.
Well, what I want to say to the community is that, one, it's very hard to understand your loved one going through one, through a crisis or going through something with that illness. But there's ways that we have services that can help you guys. You just need to call and try to bring in and hopefully that things work out. And if it can't work out, give us a call and we'll try to go out there to you guys. If you can't come in, we'll try to go out to you. And understand while certain things are being cut, there's other programs that are being expanded and open your opportunities for those. Jump into those programs, be part of that. And you might have to shift into a different program, but that's something that we as service providers need to be flexible with and inform our clients and just be educated to all the updates that come in. There could be many changes coming up, but we're going to be updating the public and informing them about the changes that's coming in. And I'm looking forward to those opportunities to assist the public.
And again, if family members are listening, the internet is a good resource. If you have questions regarding schizophrenia or one of the other diagnosed mental health, but they can also go to the Resource Center.
Yes, and go to the Resource Center, get all the information you want. There's going to be a great vocational program happening there, and it's all going to be good for the public.
Teamwork and coordinating with four doctors, three nurses.
And a lot of skilled helper.
A lot of skilled helper, you know, CBT and low division engineering that we just have to apply and put it to use. And there are going to be some adjustments we all have to make. And so I'm looking forward to these opportunities.
Well, thank you so much, Peter, for being on the show.
Thank you
so much to informing us about skilled helper and our buddy. And how it's changing, you know, our behavioral health is changing.
Yes,
and you're going to be the mental health rehab tech.
That's right.
You're going to be the one.
And buddy, you're in a better place. So take care of wherever you're at.
Well, thank you, listeners, for listening to our show. Next week we'll be back, and Scott will be back with us again. And just to let you know, this coming month we are having a great show coming up with Mr. James Shin, or Jim Shin as he's better known, well-known counselor, school counselor, and he has his own clinic here now. So we're looking forward to just keep tuned to our show, and we'll see you tonight. We'll hear from you hopefully next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KGBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.